John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and it's always a pleasure to head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline as we get to say hello to our good friend Gerald Hodges, SEC replay official, as he joins us for the remainder of the program. Gerald, how are you?
Doing well, John. How about you?
Doing quite well, thank you very much. And we can tell you that Gerald's appearance is brought to you by A.G. Hines Company, providing building materials since anyone can remember.
Gerald, I've got a few questions for you, if you can imagine that. Interesting
really?
Games over the weekend. Yeah, can you believe it? I do have a question about forward progress. Can the replay booth rule on forward progress, or is that a reviewable play?
Jimmy, that is not a reviewable play.
Also, if forward progress is called, does somebody have to have blown a whistle to stop play? Or can the officials congregate later and say, even though there wasn't a whistle, they can rule the play dead?
Jimmy, they can. There are several things in the rule book that speak to that. And if you don't mind, I'll just read you one verbatim off of it. These are several articles that cause a ball to become dead. But a live ball becomes a dead ball as provided by the rules when an official sounds their whistle or otherwise signals the ball dead. And dead ball signal in college football is one hand up over their head. And you know, it's good if they can get a whistle blown, but they don't have to blow the whistle. The whistle doesn't kill the ball. The signal will kill it.
I don't know if you're at liberty to answer this, but there was a particular play, Tennessee versus Ole Miss with Matt Corral, and I did see a video. Have you seen any video that indicates an official raised his hand to stop that play?
Jimmy, I have not seen a full video of it at all. And like I said, I know there's a video out where a former NFL official says that he saw the hand come up, but I can't speak to that, which that, you know, would have signaled a dead ball.
Okay. I want to ask you about a mechanics situation, see if you can help me with this. So there was a play in a game I was watching. There was a downfield pass of 20-something yards, and it was marked by a linesman who was about, 15 or so yards behind the play. What are the mechanics on that? Should that linesman have been downfield further? Is he supposed to stay at the line to watch for linemen downfield, underneath passes? Help me with the mechanics on that situation for a downfield pass.
Sure, Jimmy. The sideline officials, headline judge and the side judge work as a team, and then line judge and the field judge work as a tandem on the sidelines up and down the field. The mechanics actually call for both of the line of scrimmage guys. They're lined up right at the ball. And on both sides of the field, they are responsible for that sideline all the way to the 2-yard line. And it's inside the two, the side judge and field judge are giving ground. They're lining up about 20 to 25 yards deep. Of course, that's one of the positions I used to work. They've got the wide receiver on their side of the field, and their job is don't get beat. In other words, be at the goal line. And the two guys on the line of scrimmage have got everything else, you know, from the line. And plus, they do have to be alert for ineligibles downfield along with the umpire. So they've got a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah.
And it's permissible for them to trail the play. I mean, they're not going to outrun these wideouts, or especially on a 30, 40-yard pass. You know, they're not going to outrun the ball and BF even with the receiver.
So it's not unusual, then, you're saying, for that line judge to be trailing a play even by maybe 15 or 20 yards and still have to spot the ball. Is that correct?
That's correct. That is their duty. Primary duty is spot the ball. And in reality, you know, with 180, 200 plays in the game, it's not normally that critical. And of course, when it is, obviously, then if it's a third or fourth down play, then replay can get involved in it.
Gerald, one of the setups, and can fully understand and appreciate that you've got so many fans that that have access in terms of there's some luxury seating and different things like that in some venues that go all the way down to the field, and they put new areas that are right there very close to the field or even at one end zone or another. But it seems as though, and Jimmy's talked about it, and I think we've talked about it with you already, that there just aren't as many camera angles available to replay officials than what might have been there as recent as last year or definitely back in 2019. So I'm just wondering, how challenging is it, for instance, when you have a play that somebody's looking for perhaps the line to gain and you don't have the opposite side, you don't have both views, whether it be from the backside or the front side, in terms of seeing where the ball is definitively when a guy's trying to get that first down marker?
John, it's definite challenge. And the number of cameras varies from game to game. You know, we can have as little as 6 and we can have as many as 16. But the last couple of years, they have been down. We're getting a little better. I won't say, you know, we're not there, but there are definitely blind spots in the field. I didn't say blind spots, but especially on a spot, whatever it is, it's really tough to have a camera angle that is exactly perpendicular to the field, you know, the whole length of the field. Even when we have the cart cams, which typically are right at the focus at the line of scrimmage, and last year we had none. Mm-hmm. Obviously, for obvious reasons, the COVID and the travel and everything else. They're slowly bringing a few of them back, but what happens even there, unless you have pylon cameras, which they're a blessing anytime you can get them, but they're definitely not at every game. But say you've got a cart cam watching the line of scrimmage, you get a 40-yard pass that ends right at the goal line. Then you've got to judge where the ball's across the goal line when the runner's knee hit. You know, all that stuff falls in. Well, there's not a camera that's that fast. Unless you have one on the goal line, you know, i.e. the pylon cams, then it's tough. You know, it's a challenge for the producers, you know, to try to, you know, outguess the quarterbacks, I guess is the best way to put it.
Gerald, through the time that you've been doing this, both on the field and in the replay booth, have you seen many delays that were created by a fan base, by a fans in attendance?
No, I haven't actually, John. And I tell my age, but this is my 33rd year in the SEC. We have had some instances around the conference and around the country of objects being thrown on the field.
Mm-hmm.
We used to kind of joke about it. There were a couple of stadiums around the conference that were famous for throwing Jack Daniels bottles on the field when you got close to the end line and the fans were there, but our problem was they were always empty.
Can you take us through, is there a point in time when a crew can assess a penalty on the home fans in terms of whether it be delay a game or any unsportsmanlike conduct? Is there anything in the rule book that would allow that to happen?
Well, you know, at one time, and I know y'all remember, they tried to enforce the crowd noise rule.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, you warn and then penalize. And the only thing the warning did was made it louder.
Yeah.
That was when I was on the field and you could count on it. You know? So they literally get away with it. And it was funny because we had a Sugar Bowl game one year in the Dome in New Orleans and had a team from the Big Ten and a team out of the old Southwest Conference. So we had the pregame meeting the day before with TV and the opposing coaches and all the officials, and they asked the question. This was back when it was kind of dying out, but they asked our referee, said, well, what is your crowd noise procedure? And he said, we don't have crowd noise. So, you know, so play on is basically what his advice to.
Let's get a call from Reed. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Reed.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
Doing well. Hope you are.
Hey, Reed. Thank you. Mr. Hodges, I've got a question. I've got many questions about the UT game, but I'm going to go to a different game that I was watching Saturday. Can you explain to me a delay of game on the defense?
Sure. Absolutely. There are several ways you can get a delay of game on the defense. The biggest way is, which people do not understand, is disconcerting signals by the defense. And that's been around forever. But when the offense comes up to the line and they're using a certain word or a certain cadence to, call for the snap, if the defense picks up on that and they yell that word or whatever it is, they yell that and then the offense moves because that's their key, then that's going to be it's disconcerting signals, but it's penalized as a delay game on the defense. And just in the last couple of years, and it's become a real issue, and we're really enforcing it. A lot of the quarterbacks now, especially from the shotgun, they clap their hands for the snap. Well, we've had issues with the defense, clapping their hands and the offensive linemen move because they hear it. And that is another way of delay a game on the defense.
Thank you very much, sir. I just could not understand that particular rule, and I appreciate your definition of it. Thank you. You have a great night.
No problem. Thank you.
We sure do appreciate the call, Reed. And Gerald, that's something that you also see at the high school level, and maybe sometimes in the National Football League, where it's the defense trying to do what it can to get a false start and a quick 5 yards against the offense. I wonder, now, is there any aspect of that right now that would be reviewable?
No. That is just, that's on the two wingmen, we call them the wingmen, and the umpire, maybe even the center judge that's back with the referee. But if the umpire is 8 yards deep, center judge is 10 yards deep, if they hear the clap, then they know that it's a foul. But that right now is not reviewable. We wouldn't be able to do it. We wouldn't be able to hear the clap in the press box. We're typically glassed in, I guess you'd say.
You used to work the sidelines, and you showed us a picture where you were actually conversing, or primarily being conversed at by Steve Spurrier. But I'm just wondering.
That was a nice conversation. Yeah.
But tell me, when you're in that position, and you of course get the brunt of what the head coach, every issue that he might have had before, during, and after, I'm just wondering, how much does that sink in where, for instance, he says, hey, this team is doing this when they're on offense or defense? How much of that gets relayed to the rest of the crew to say, they say they're doing this, watch out for it? Does that get relayed?
Well, it does, and literally, believe it or not, officiating college football, you've got to be a little bit of a diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
I always was very fortunate, and I was able to handle a lot of that. And a lot of times the coaches would come up for a question on something that happened in the middle of the field or the far side of the field, or something like that. And they'll come up and say, what happened over there? And the only answer to give them is, coach, I don't know, but the next time out, I'll find out. And I always made the point to go, if I could answer their question. Sometimes they just want to complain, which is understandable, or vent, mm-hmm. especially they get a flag on the far side of the field and that other guy over there is just terrible. They'll ask, what's he doing? So you've got to listen and literally that, and that's a key. Now, John, Jimmy, anything you do, whether you're in sales or what, listen to people, let them know you're at least paying attention. And that always worked well for me. But I would try to answer their question as best I could. I would not debate them. You're never going to win a debate with a coach on the sidelines, mm-hmm. And that's understandable. But answer their question the best you can.
Our guest SEC replay official, Gerald Hodges. Let's go back to the phones, and it is Jacob who joins us next. Hello, Jacob.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Doing well. Hope you are.
Good, Jacob.
Oh, yeah. Gerald, good to talk to you. I want to ask you about the second half of the Ole Miss game when Hooker started running the ball a lot and Tennessee was having some success and they were trying to go tempo. And I saw, everybody saw that was watching that game, just a rash of defensive injuries at key times when Tennessee was trying to go tempo. I've never seen the refs call a penalty or question an injury, but don't you think they kind of need to when it's that obvious?
Well, Jacob, that's a very good point, and I wish we had an hour that I can go through this with you, but it is an issue. They've been addressing it in the rules committee for the last 3 years or so, and on the officials' end of it, if a player goes down with an injury, we have to stop the game. We have no choice, and it's, you know, it's a liability issue, unfortunately, in today's society. And we have no choice but to stop the play and get trainers on the field and then get them off. I know 2 years ago they brought it up to the rules committee. And keep in mind, the rules committee is made up of coaches. And there's one official that's an advisory to that committee. But the rules committee is made up of coaches and ADs. So they came up with the idea then 2 years ago that the coaches themselves would police it. They would take care of it. So that went along last year, and it didn't seem to work. So at the rules committee meeting prior to this year, they brought up the idea of assessing a penalty or not necessarily a penalty, but if the player was injured, there were several proposals, one to sit out four plays and one a series. I know Jimmy's expressed saying that a series could be one play. They can score on the next play or punt. So, you know, either four or five plays they have to sit out. There's no player that he's injured bad enough that he has to come out of the game that he can get well in one play. We know that. So that proposal failed. So under this year's rules, that if that happens in a game, the opposing team can contact the National Coordinator of Officials, which is Steve Shaw, and they will review it and then refer it to the school's athletic department. But the problem with that is, you know, they've accomplished what they want to do. You know, they look at it on Monday, the game's over on Saturday night.
Exactly.
I expect this year there'll be a lot more discussion and hopefully a rule change to put a little teeth into it.
Hey, Gerald, can I ask you this real quick? Is it a rule you can't do it, but there's no punishment to it? So basically it has no teeth? Is that accurate?
Well, yeah, there's no rule about it. The whole thing our officials say, if there's a player goes down with an injury, we stop the game until he's attended to and off the field.
Okay, so there's no rule that says don't do it because even if you did, there's no penalty to go with it. Okay, Jacob, go ahead.
Well, that is a it's under the rule, you know, sportsmanship type things in the rule book. They're not supposed to coach it, put it that way.
Okay.
And the coaching ethics is where it comes in.
So it's a rule, but it can't be enforced, basically. Yeah. Okay.
Well, there's no penalty for
right.
it.
So right. So that's why it's hard to enforce it. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
I've got one more question before I hop off here about the Matt Corral strip where Tennessee scored and then it was taken off the scoreboard there. We've all seen what a referee calling a play dead looks like. They not only, I mean, now this is me, you other three gentlemen can also give me your opinion. They blow the whistle and then they come running toward the players, waving their arms, blowing the play dead. Now, not only did we not see any whistles, we not hear any whistles, but the refs weren't acting anywhere on the field like either one of them was blowing the play dead. They were standing in their positions doing their job. I think Matt Corral was running like a Statue of Liberty type play fake, and he was surprised at our defenders being right on him, and that's what happened. I mean, what do you guys think?
I don't know. I think John and I have a different view on it. I don't know what he was doing. There was a part of me that thought that he felt like there must have been a whistle, so he just stopped. John, you felt like since he didn't contest it,
yes,
that he felt like, okay, that's a touchdown for Tennessee.
No, I agree with Jacob's read. Yeah. I think it was a play fake. Mm-hmm. And Josh Heupel shared those thoughts himself today during his comments when Vince asked him about it, that he thought that it was setting up a play, a delayed play over the middle. So I thought that he was hiding the ball, and I thought that he was looking to throw it. And Tennessee just had two defenders that wound up right there at the football, Young and Tyler Barron. And I just kind of thought that the fact that you didn't see any protest from him, because he wasn't bashful when it came to sharing his agreement or disagreement with penalties that had been called through the remainder of the game, I just thought the fact that you didn't see protest from him, that signaled that this was that. I mean, I think when his coach was saying everybody stopped, I think that if he'd heard a whistle, he would have been part of the protest that was giving the Ole Miss side of the story that it should not be a touchdown.
Basically, Jacob, I don't know what the heck happened.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
And that's, again, we're looking at it, the same footage, and we're coming up with our own, I guess, deductions.
Yeah.
And I guess the only people that could tell you 100% would be Matt Corral and everybody that was right there.
On Wednesday's SEC teleconference, if I get on it, I'm going to ask Lane Kiffin that directly.
There you go.
And see if he can skirt it.
Anyway. But, Jacob, we sure do appreciate it. Let's go next to Jim. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jim.
How you doing?
Doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. A question for Mr. Hodges here. If a player is trying to get off the field, I do what?
He said hello.
I said, hey, Jim.
Okay. If a player is trying to get off the field and he don't get off the field in time and they've got too many players on the field, that's a penalty, I assume. If the player is trying to get off the field and he trips and falls and still don't get off the field in time, that's a penalty. Is there such a rule called insulting the official's intelligence rule, where the coaching staff is waving him and nothing wrong with him? He's running just full speed, nothing wrong with him. They tell him to fall down and fake an injury. Is there an insulting the official's intelligent rule on that? And one more question, I'll get off here. Is there a rule against three or four players holding a player up while one just don't even try to tackle? He's just trying to strip the ball. If there's not a rule on that, I wish there was. And, Mr. Hodges, I'll hang up and listen to your comment.
Sure, Jim. Yeah, and to answer your first question, there should be a rule on insulting the official's intelligence. Now, that's another thing that's been brought up. Going back to this faking an injury rule is, you know, if you see a coach on the sidelines over there, you know, but the get down signal, mm-hmm. you know, they're even talking about maybe being able to penalize a coach on the sidelines, but that one's probably not going to get a lot of traction. But
once you explain how rules are created, that's probably true. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
it should be one that's up for review, because not only have you seen it very recently in terms of within the last couple of days, but there was, I mean, you can just see it specifically where a coach, there was one, and it might have been, I think, Jimmy, the Arkansas game, where you see Lane Kiffin telling a player to get down.
We saw a Tennessee coach do it too.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's what I was saying at the start of that. But anyhow, but you would think, Gerald, that would be video that, if not something that could be disseminated during the course of one play to the next by the replay official, that would be something that a conference could step in with something to say, look, we see what you're doing.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And it, you know, I think there's going to be a little more movement this year, I think, over that rule. And and what was Jim's second question? I should have written it down.
If you're holding up two guys holding up a player, is the third guy allowed to try to strip the football from him?
Okay. That pretty much takes care of itself. If you've got two guys holding the player, then that would be, that would, you would, you'd want to blow that play dead. And then anything happens after, it's like forward progress. You've seen it. A runner will go into the line and he'll get as far as he can. And then they start pushing him back and pushing him back. And then finally somebody will rip the ball out. Mm-hmm. Well, that's when forward progress makes sense. You know, it's going back to where he gets his forward progress, and then once they start pushing him back, the ball should be dead.
Apologies to those who were calling in to ask questions. We had the little bit of machine bobble there, which cost us a little bit of time. So if you can, Gerald will be back with us next Monday. Shelve your questions, and we'll be glad to get to you. And we appreciate Steve and apologize to Tom, Mike, for not being able to get to your questions. Gerald, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
That'll be fine. Y'all have a good week, too.
All right.
Thank you, Gerald.
Sure to appreciate it. That's Gerald Hodges. His appearance brought to you by A.G. Hines Company.